Horses with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races. And thanks to David Ross for taking really fun half hour. Great story. Extravagant kid. And plus his other efforts in and around the game. Andy Serling ready to visit and do some recapping, gain some insight into the performances. Wood Day and not just at Aqueduct. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, excellent, and certainly the weekend produced its share of you know, exciting results, interesting results, big efforts. It seems to me, Mischievous Alex, I know it was a small field in the Carter, Andy, but it sure feels like there should be more, you know, more hubbub over that performance.
Well, yes and no, you know, when you have the majority of the focus is on prep races, and you have three of them in one weekend. I don't think it's overly surprising that other performances get overlooked a little bit. So he ran great. I mean, he's obviously feels like a major player in the division, you know, whether how far he wants to go. But the connections, I think they're pointing them at mile, but they suggested that they feel it'll be better going shorter, 6 and 7 races like the Vanderbilt and Borgo, Saratoga, but no, he's been terrific this year. He really does feel like a sort of a star in that division, right?
We're going to have Chuck Zachney tomorrow, and we'll see what Chuck's thoughts are on that. You know, on that front. That was an effort that was sort of telegraphed. I mean, every indication was that he had been working great down in Florida, and kind of came up, obviously, both of the Safi Joseph runners, the three-year-old as well, who kind of figured late over the Bayshore field, too.
Well, I don't agree with that, actually, but okay, he did win, so congratulations to him on winning. But I think it might have been a very different race if the five had, you know, stumbled severely after the start of the race, because he would have put some pressure on him. Then I think the second-place finisher would have made it even closer. I mean, Graydon Cox did what he had to do, and obviously, you know, it's a good day for Safi Joseph. He chipped three horses up. They all won. One was the York Bred in the last race. But, I mean, personally, I applaud him for winning Graydon Cox, but I'll be very surprised if he's able to be effective in, you know, the stronger races going forward. This was not a particularly strong field, and I wasn't overly impressed by him, but okay.
Well, it was, and you're talking about the Butchie Reed horse on the outside Baron.
He stumbled badly at the start. They watched the head on.
Yeah.
He took a step, and then he stumbled very severely in space, and he's a speed horse. So he would have been forward, and it wouldn't have been as ludicrously a slow pace. And the second horse, who's a deep closer, you know, would have gotten a little more pace to run it. I'm not saying he would have won. I think it would have been significantly closer. You know, Graydon Cox, you know, they came and others didn't. But I think a lot of the others that are ultimately going to be players in the Woody Stevens and the Alan Jerkins are horses, you know, like a Crowded Trade, who, you know, will get to the wood. Maybe a Prevalence, you know, there are where Jackie's Warrior, I mean, we didn't like his return race, but I don't think you want to condemn off one race. Obviously, he showed last year to have great talent as a 2-year-old in those races. So, I mean, I think they're aware the competition is going to get tougher, and they came for this race, a Grade 3, and others didn't. So they were smart in doing that, but the competition is going to get much, much, much more severe for him.
That runner-up, Whiskey Double, Steve Asmussen. So we'll watch as the three-year-olds, and then you bring up
his runner-up ran well, very well in there, considering the dynamics of the race. No, I'm not saying that he's necessarily a leader in that division either, but I think he's an improving horse, and I think under much fairer conditions, he could certainly give the winner a tougher race.
You know, I know that we'll walk through here, and actually, even before I ask about the Excelsior and the Gazelle, I should mention the import, the Flighty Lady, the Peter Brandt Sir Percy 4-year-old, and that was an interesting race, Andy. That allowance, because there were three first-time North Americans from, you know, from barns that excel with first-time North America types.
Well, that's actually not true. Vermont has terrible numbers with first-time horses coming over from barn shippers. He's a 10% trainer with an ROI of under a dollar. So if anything, they need a race or two before they run their best. Grand Motion has better numbers, but those two horses were both horses that appear to want more distance and also not appear to be particularly good. And at least one of them appeared to be more of a synthetic horse. So I don't think it's that surprising that neither of them ran particularly effectively. And Whitey Lady was in a different league than those horses on paper. She had been running in group races. She had finished third in the Marcel Broussac, which is the big two-year-old race on Arc Day. And then in her two races last year, one of them was a third-place finish to Magic Attitude. So she was in a different league than the other two Europeans. That's why she was a super short price in there, not just because Chad Brown trained her. They shipped her over here last year for whatever reason. She never made the races. She ran very well. I mean, I don't know how strong the competition was when Phil Prophet, who I think finished second, the pace setter. I thought she had real promise last year. She kind of plateaued and never really moved forward. If anything, she may have even taken a step backward from those couple races when she broke her maiden and in her next race when she had that slow pace to deal with. So I don't want to get too, I'm not knocking play later. And right. She said, expire, but she didn't really beat any competition. Obviously it was a good starting point, and I think I'm guessing that Chad would want to have more ground for. I don't know. I watched a race with him, but I didn't ask him. I didn't give him a third degree on her future. But she appears to want more ground. She ran very well in there. But once again, the competition's going to get tougher, and she's going to have to run better and better if she's going to compete in the bigger races. But I think, Chad Brown announced that he was back in New York winning the first three turf races, and one of them was a mediocre maiden, that Linda claimed. The other one was a very promising, he ran one too, but the promising Karamata, who's another Peter Brandt horse who had run overseas, but since coming here, broke his maiden at Tampa and then won here on Friday. So, I think that Chad Brown was happy to have turf racing back, as was Peter Brandt winning those three races. And, Peter had sort of an unlucky year last year, but he had a very fortunate and good year the year before. So racing, you'll have a number of bad luck before you have a good luck. But he seems to have some runners poised. Whether or not they're going to be effective if the competition gets tougher, that's always the question.
Speaking of poised, Bill Mott comes back up from Florida, and Modernist. And granted, Mr. Buff had a colic episode and couldn't make the race, so the complexion changes. But Modernist ran well.
It was a weak race with a slow pace. Modernist won. I think you have to put it in perspective with Heichel finishing second, despite the ridiculously slow pace. And, maybe Todd's got Heichel back on a forward track. How good he ever was remains in doubt. And, how good Modernist is also is really questionable. He's obviously run better in his two races as a four-year-old than he ever ran as a three-year-old. But the competition's also going to get tougher for him. They're talking Brooklyn with him in a mile and a half. I think it's a wise move because he has enough speed that he can always put himself into races. And a lot of those distance races don't feature particularly strong paces. And let's face it, those divisions also haven't featured particularly good horses. We'll see. We'll see what the competition looks like. I think you have to, if you're Modernist as your horse, you have to be pleased with him obviously taking a step forward from 3 to 4 and having run reasonably well at both of his starts. But once again, racing is going to get tougher at some point for him, and where he fits, when he runs in stronger races, well, we'll find out. We'll see who he's running against, and we'll go from there. But at least he won, and he's a better horse than last year. I will say that. There's no question about it. Last year he was one-paced, and, he was able to walk on the front end and then the Risen Star and LeComps. And then in the next race in Louisiana, he was part of a merry-go-round where he finished a distant third, and then he ran two clunkers in the Belmont and Jim Dandy. Not Jim Dandy, the Peter Pan. So, obviously he's improved from there. And listen, Bill Mott's having a heck of a year. That's something I don't think we really talked about because we don't talk about Florida much because none of us is paying attention to Gulfstream, but he's winning down about 30% down there. He had a fabulous meet down there. So it's, and horses come up here. I said to Leanna, Wilford, who's his assistant up here, who's worked for Bill for, it's got to be like close to 20 years, if not longer now.
Mm-hmm.
And, she had been a very successful trainer on her own. She was the leading trainer in Iowa before she went to work for Bill. And She joked, I said, the pressure's on you now. And the Florida horse is coming up, having once in a while. She said, when I'm around, there's never any pressure. You know, she's great. And but it's not a question of pressure. The question is, will these horses continue to run as well as they did in Florida? We'll see. But if they do, Bill's poised to have a very big year.
Definitely.
He won the Paris Lights in a slow running.
That's right, on Friday.
But I don't think that was their goal or where they expect to be. I know they're pointing to watch Rayanne in her next start. And she never run a hugely fast race, but she's run it well enough. But now with two graded stakes wins in just five starts, and maybe Paris Lights takes a step forward, and she's a player in that older filly and mare division. So, you know, they're going great guns right now.
Turn our attention to the three-year-old features, and search results was as polished and professional as can be, and wins at 2-5. Maracuja ran well to be second in here to get some black type.
Yeah, you know, it's, you look at search results, and I know Andy raised the buyer raised her Busher Fig to 92, and I talked to him about it on Sunday, and he said he always thought it was a faster number, and she's won three times, and another horse who's won two stakes, one of them graded. I think the Busher was a graded stakes race in quality, for sure, especially these days. And she's the highest fig going into the Kentucky Oaks.
I mean, yep.
Listen, the competition is significant. Malathot, which is very visually impressive, you know, really relentless in winning the Ashland at Keeneland, and you know, the first two finishers. I know Clarier is one of them, and the other one is in the Fairgrounds Oaks. They look very good as well. So she's going to have some real competition, but certain results is okay. She's definitely a player in the Kentucky Oaks, in a competitive Kentucky Oaks. Second Oaks looks like a fun race this year. It's interesting, you know, it looks like such a good group of two-year-old fillies last year. They've all basically gone by the wayside, right? Nyquist sucked in her return. Simply Ravishing is awful at Keeneland. We haven't seen Day of the Office. I know they're saying that the Eight Bells, I think, with her. I hope she comes back. I'll believe when I see it, because she's supposed to run the Fantasy. She's supposed to run the Gulfstream Oaks. She's supposed to run here. She's supposed to run there. And, you know, horses like that have a tendency to not show up when, you know, the next time they're supposed to run. But I hope she does, because she's a neat horse. But that group has really kind of gone by the wayside. I know that what's-her-name won down in Florida, Crazy Beautiful, but the Gulfstream Oaks did not look like a particularly strong race over Mille Foyle, who didn't go on with her Demoiselle, where she was second. She had trouble in the Devoted Dale, but I bet her in the Gulfstream Oaks. She did a little wide the first turn, a little aggressive, but she also had a very good trip, and she was just second best. But, you know, there's like a whole new wave of horses between, you know, Travel Column and Clarier, who both run well in the Goldenrod at the end of Churchill, and Search Party, who didn't even run until Gulfstream. And Malathot, who won the Demoiselle, and she's undefeated 4-4. She's good in the Weaver, horse to finish second to her. But she run twice in the Ashland. She's obviously a potential, you know, real runner. So it's interesting with them. We've lost the good-looking horse from last year, but we've sort of managed to keep it up with a lot of new shooters.
Gets us to Illusion. The feature. Yeah, and... Andy, just when you thought you'd seen everything,
what's going on, Steve?
Your thoughts on Bourbonic?
My thoughts on who? Oh, Bourbonic. Oh, the Wood Memorial. Well, you know, I mean, obviously Bourbonic was a sort of ridiculous horse going into the race. What he is now, I don't know. I mean, one thing I'll say about him is, horses are funny, and you don't often see horses dramatically change running styles. And in fairness to Bourbonic, who even, let's be honest, with his Wood effort, he'd have to improve to likely be a player in any, you know, major three-year-old race going forward. But he came from way back. You know, he was probably a good 5 to 8 lengths at least behind the second to last horse going down the backstretch. And maybe what they found out here is that if he's going to be successful at any kind of reasonably high level, he's going to be a horse that's going to want to drop out of races and make one big run. You know, unfortunately, that's not a running style that's particularly conducive to dirt racing in this country. It's not just that we rarely seem to have competitive paces, especially in route races in New York, but it's also that dirt racing favors horses. It's more, you know, favors horses that have early speed. So you're not going to see that running style be particularly effective. Maybe on this more demanding track, maybe in a, you know, not a particularly strong race, it worked out for him. So in fairness to Brabonic, I kind of want to see what he does next time, because I imagine, you know, I'm assuming they're going to run him in the Derby, and I imagine that they'll do a similar thing, you know, just drop out of the race and try to make one run. I don't think anybody is, you know, confusing him with a likely Derby winner. It'll probably be a, not 72-1, but not a short fraction of that either in the Derby. And he shouldn't be. But on the other hand, I think to be fair to him, you might want to say, well, maybe he's a better horse if he can make that one run. We'll see if that's a run that's effective in the future. But the reality is that in one turn races at Belmont, you know, if after the Derby they chose to run in the Peter Pan, assuming he doesn't run effectively in the Derby, maybe that's the kind of race where the pace gets a little hotter and he can make that big run. So I'm not going to be overly critical of him. And this has never been a running style that he's particularly employed in his other races, which were decidedly mediocre. I think for Todd, I'm sure it was a frustratingly positive result for him, because if you're Todd Fletcher and the connections of one horse that win aren't at Aqueduct, and all the connections, being two of them being Vinnie Viola and Mike Rivoli, are at Aqueduct, and you've got to, you know, go out and go to the winner's circle with a horse that beat their horse by a neck, I can understand why, if I were Todd, I'd be like, this is the worst victory walk I've ever had to take. And also, I think there's a very fair argument that the guy ran the best horse that finished second, because if you take the race apart, Dynamic One finished second, it's hard to say he didn't run the best race. He was pretty wide around both turns. He made the earlier move that flattened out a number of other horses, and he sort of did everything but win the race. I don't think he ran one of the world's greatest races, but to be fair, given his trip in the track, it was, what, probably 89, 38 winning by or something, he took a big step forward. And I think for a horse that took a ton of money in his debut, I'm not sure it was Cigar Day, maybe the Saturday before, whatever he ran his debut, maybe it was the Weyburn race, actually, the race he went second to that Wolfie's ghost horse, the Albertroni horse.
Yes.
He got completely left that day, and then he ran second to Greatest Honor in that race on the day after Christmas. So he's been a high-hope horse since the beginning, and he seems to be putting it together. And, you know, as Todd was saying, you know, the horse is getting stronger a little bit later. That's probably a good thing for them. And this is a horse the Fifth Stable is partly involved in. I guess they sold their two-year-old colts, or their, you know, the colts to Matt Croft, but they wanted to stay involved with him, and they were right in doing so. So I think there's reasons. Not, I'm not saying it's a detriment to the winner, but I think the second horse did run the best race. And I'm not saying, once again, he's going to have to take a step forward to be a factor here. But this Derby field isn't – I'm not defending the Wood, this idiocy out there that the Wood field was garbage and it's always a bad race. That's just BS. That's just, you know, the usual crap. But it was the most compelling prep going in. Sometimes races, horses don't show up and run the races you'd hope. But the winner did step forward, or the second horse stepped forward, the winner too, and ran very well. As far as Crowded Trade, I mean, I think with Crowded Trade and ran third, a couple things happened. One is he broke poorly again like he did in his debut. He had broken better in the Gotham. And he ran so well in the Gotham when he was forward. He made what looked like a winning move, I think a lot of us felt, you know, around the quarter pole, and he didn't lose ground like the second finisher. He saved some ground and angled out late that a lot of us thought Crowd Trade or Out of Trade is going to run right by these horses and win. He doesn't want a mile. I don't think he wants the distance. I mean, they may go to the Preakness, but they also may wait for the Woody Stevens, which, in my opinion, is probably the more likely move as far as success, because I think Crowd Trade is very, very good. I don't think he wants to go that far. He did not finish up. But he's another horse. He went three times. And, you know, for a horse who's run three times, Crowded Trade ran pretty damn well in his races. Risk-taking obviously didn't show up at all. He was atrocious. He was pulling a bit early on IRAD. Maybe he was tough settling, but he was more forward when he broke his maiden. And the reality of risk-taking is he just didn't run. Prevalence didn't run either. With risk-taking, he had shown he could handle the distance, and he had taken the steps forward necessary to make him a horse that should have been much more effective. With Prevalence, you never clear he was that good and never clear that he was a distance horse anyway, so I think his performance was less surprising. I think he's another horse that would be more suited to Woody Stevens. Maybe they don't think he's ready for it, but I think they should probably be looking for a non-winner. So two with him, but maybe it'll be hard to find those races, so he ends up. I'd be going shorter than longer on Prevalence if he was my horse. You know, if Godolphin is fortunate enough to win the Derby with Central Quality, then they won't have to concern themselves much with that. But I don't know who else was in there. I mean, Brooke was strong. Maggie thought that he was, you know, didn't like how he looked in the paddock. He was washing out. He hadn't done that when she had seen him in previous races, so that may have contributed to it, and the layoff and whatever issues he had as well. I wouldn't write off Brooklyn Strong, but he obviously didn't run particularly well, though he didn't run horrendously for a horse that hadn't run in 4 months. That's about the story of the wood, I think.
Yeah. No, well framed, Andy. Perfect.
Nothing's ever perfect, Steve.
Well, no, but the right tone. You set the right tone in evaluating what went on in there. The funniest part of it to me is that I had Todd. You know, I had Todd on ostensibly to recap Known Agenda's win, and I said, you know, look ahead to Saturday, Todd, and he kind of doted on Dynamic One, and then acknowledged.
Right, I mean, he was on the right. You know, Dynamic One did run the best race of anybody, in fairness. And, you know, listen, the thing with Calumet, Kelly.
Brad Kelly,
right. He runs a lot of horses that are over their head in stake races, but you know what? Bourbonic or Bourbonic, and it's funny about Bourbonic, because I'll get to in a second, makes up for a lot of those races. So who's to criticize him? You know, uh-huh. Chief ran a lot of horses over their heads in races. He also won some of them. So I, you know, give the guy credit. He participates, and from a racing standpoint, we're happy to have him in our fields. And it's not like they all run badly. So good for him. It's funny with Bourbonic is the prevailing opinion was you pronounced it Bourbonic, and that's how Johnny I had pronounced it, and that's how Maggie and I were pronouncing it. And when he ran, I think when he won the race after his maiden win, Anthony Seville was calling the race, and he called him Bourbonic. And I called him up, and I said, Bourbonic, after the race. And he said, oh, I just looked at it and thought it was Bourbon, and it was Bourbonic. And he is from, you know, Brad Kelly, I guess he's talking about Bourbon and Kentucky, you know, Kentucky and Bourbon, whatever.
Sure.
And so I thought, oh, that, you know what, that's actually a good point. So I texted Todd, who was in Florida at the time. And I said, we're having an internal debate about the pronunciation of his name. You know, Maggie and Johnny I, and I think it's Bourbonic. And, you know, I spell it out for him in Bourbonic. And he said, I think I'll go with Bourbonic. I think we'll go with Bourbonic because of Bourbon, like Anthony thought. So that's how we decided, at least, that you should pronounce his name. And that I thought of that after he won the Wood Memorial.
I love it. That's great. Well, Todd basically said that, you know, the Dynamic One was a horse that they had anticipated for this kind of a opportunity, and Bourbonic, you know, he said is a big, you know, big horse,
and he wants to run big races.
Exactly.
And they're going to, you know, you have to accept what they're going to want to do, and it's clearly worth it. I think for Todd, you could easily say to Brad Kelly, I'm never going to second guess you making me run
exactly
when he's over set again. The way it goes. You can't win him if you're not in him. And this horse ran better. We'll see what he does going forward. You know, I always appreciate Todd's candor. I think unlike a number of other trainers, he's not full of it. You know, I mean, I really respected a great deal what he said after Known Agenda won when he was interviewed. And I think it may have been Paul. We were out of Florida. I think it was on our broadcast. I definitely saw it and, you know, asked about him being green in the stretch. And Todd said, you know, he's obviously got some greenness issues and those things, et cetera, et cetera. And Todd doesn't shy away. You know, and I'm not one of the Bob Baffert haters. I like Bob, but, you know, and it was more Mike Smith than Bob. But, you know, after the Life is Good thing, the you know, making up stories as to why he, you know, was drifting out in the stretch in this video screen, that idiocy when he was doing it well before he was even in the stretch. You know, what's wrong with just being honest about it and saying, you know, horses are green, they have some issues, we're working through them, blah, 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 whatever. And I feel as though Todd is a trainer who always is very honest about his horses before and after races.
Couple of thoughts, Andy. Let's look outward from New York, and actually we'll move center of the country to the west. Your thoughts about you already kind of referenced Malathat, and you were impressed with her, and certainly passed the champagne for George Weaver. Ran a potentially winning race, and they'll go forward.
Like a cinch, you know, like yep. She exploded on yep. horses when she came through top of the stretch, and I yep. actually bet a few dollars on her, but you know, the usual. Why didn't I bet more? And Malathat just kept on coming. It's very similar to the race she ran at Demoiselle. And I think she's a horse that just doesn't get into gear until late. So she, I think in some ways it makes her look more impressive than she is, because, you know, you're like, I can't believe she won. But on the other hand, now she's done it twice in a row. I think you just have to take into account that's the kind of horse she is. You know, tough race off a layoff for her. We'll see, you know, does she take a step forward in the Oaks? But it's hard to knock Malathat at this point. And the second horse is obviously extremely promising as well.
As I said to you off air, Malathat is one of those rarities that is a dirt horse that runs like a turf horse.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I thought about that. I think turf horses have more of an explosive turn of foot. That's more associated with turf racing. She's a grinder.
That's fair.
She doesn't have an explosive turn of foot. She grinds, but she grinds effectively. I'm not saying that as a knock in any way. She's obviously been very good in her two races, but she's more of a grinding type. But she's a grinder who gets it done.
You know what? We'll revisit that style when we talk about Medina Spirit in a minute. Your thoughts about the knockdown, shoulder to shoulder, the terrific bluegrass performances?
Yeah, it was a great race. They were the two horses on paper. I, the betting was wrong in there. They shouldn't have been 1-2 and almost 4-1. They should have been probably even money and 9-5 or something, 2-1. And I know that people that are results oriented don't think it was close, but it was. And I think Essential Quality gets a lot of credit for grinding out the win. He's still yet to demonstrate that he's demonstratively better as a 3-year-old than he was as a 2-year-old. He's still yet to, in my opinion, to have shown that he is able to overcome adversity, because this was a moderately paced race. And if you're highly motivated, if highly motivated didn't go to the lead, and it may have given him his best chance to win going to the lead, but he had no chance, because then Essential Quality would have loped around the racetrack and he never could have caught him. So they were in a damned if you do, damned if you don't position with him in this particular race. As far as Essential Quality, he's a very good horse. I'm not being critical of him. He's also now run like 95, 96, 97 buyers in his races. He hasn't taken that real step forward. So is he a horse that's demonstrated that he's going to do that in the Kentucky Derby? Maybe. You know, it's only his second start this year and only his fifth career start. He certainly has room to improve, and he may. But I do think that it's fair to be concerned, especially for a horse that may very well be the favorite, depending especially on what happens out in Arkansas, which we can talk about. I'm not unimpressed, but I'm not overly impressed. And with Highly Motivated, what he showed is that he can be effective going longer. And let's not pretend it was a super slow pace for either one of them, but it wasn't a particularly super strong pace. But maybe if you're Highly Motivated, the feeling is that he can be more effective waiting on rating. And the Derby, where there may be some more pace, and we'll get to that in a second, Highly Motivated has a chance to take a step forward. I'm not saying he's raced to win. I don't want to hear this nonsense that race demonstrates you can't get a mile and a quarter. I'm not exactly sure how losing by a head or neck to the current favorite, the Derby, somehow makes, you know, Essential Quality a horse you really want from the Derby going forward, and Highly Motivated a horse you want to chuck out. Well, that's not, I'm not saying I particularly love the chances of either one of them, but I wouldn't say one negates the other. But it was a very exciting race, and they're two really good horses. You know, whether or not they end up being good enough to win the Derby or effective in those races, it's a really nice horse. That was an exciting race. You know, two horses throwing it down, the best two horses, and running like that. Those are always fun races. So I like the race.
Yeah, definitely. And it, you know, it elevates, frankly, it just elevates the whole discussion. And I think it got people, you know, excited for what lies ahead.
Yeah, but let's not overly praise the winner at the expense of the runner-up in this case.
Not at all.
Praise. They're both contenders. And, you know, I don't know who thought 5-1 was a good price on the winner of the Santa Anita Derby. None of them were me, and I certainly wouldn't have bet the horse in a million years. And I'm not sure how you take 5-1 off two slow turf races. and assume he's a dirt horse and ask to improve, but forgetting about the betting, improve he did. And Rock Your World was very good in there. I think Bob, the problem that Bob Baffert faces with Medina Spirit is that he's a better horse when he's front forward. And I don't know what he wants to do with him, but if I'm the connection to Medina Spirit, I'm telling Bob, I know you got Concert Tour in that race, but I want to be forward. I don't want to concede the lead to anybody in those races. So that presents a sort of problematic situation.
Yeah.
Medina Spirit, in my opinion, was very disappointing in there. Not that he ran badly, but he just didn't have it. He never felt like he was getting by that horse. Now, one of the reasons he never felt he was getting by him was the other horse was good. The other horse kept running. So, you know, Rock Your World was very good in the Sandy Derby, and from a speed figure standpoint, he was the star of the weekend. Whether or not he can play that running style, if Medina Spirit is more aggressive and potentially against Concert Tour, and I do want to quickly, and I know it's getting late, but I want to talk about Arkansas this weekend. You know, so he injects speed into the race, something we haven't seen in a lot of derbies in recent years. So, but I don't, I think if the Rocky World's your horse and you like him or you own him or you train him, you're pretty excited because he ran big.
Yeah.
That was a solid performance. So I don't want to take anything away from him. He took it to those horses, and he was in control, and he looked strong through the finish. So I liked his race. I think what's interesting about Arkansas this weekend is it seems inconceivable that Caddo River is going to take back this week.
Well, I had Brad Cox earlier. He's not taken back. He's gone.
No, he has to go.
Period.
Because he obviously showed in the last race there's no way he's going to beat that horse from behind. Because he had the right trip sitting behind him. So he's got to go in here. And Bob knows that with Concert Tour. So maybe if you're Baffert, you sort of don't mind because you say, okay, it makes my job easier. I can't employ the same tactics. I'm going to have to rate. But how much do you want to rate? Are you sure you want to just sort of comfortably sit up Caddo River and allow that horse to dictate a moderate pace? So I think that the tactics of the Arkansas Derby make it a much potentially more compelling race. And I think it brings a lot of intrigue to the race. Personally, if I'm Bob, I let Caddo River go. I sit behind him, and I assume I'm just a better horse. But we'll see. Are you 100% confident? The Concert Tour is an effective router, rating. I don't know. I think if you're Bob, it's a good time to find that out before the Derby. But if you find it out from a negative standpoint, then what do you do going to the Derby? So I think there's a lot of interesting subplots to this race. I'm not sold on Caddo River, period. And he's got a lot to prove because right now he's just not fast enough even off his good races. But I think that it's a subplot, a very strong subplot, the Arkansas Derby, that's going to have some real implications in that race and in the races coming up this weekend.
Well, and for those that haven't seen what looks to be the group, I mean, somewhere between 6 and 8 after Concert Tour and Caddo River, Baffert's other horse, Hosier, their super stock for Asmussen. Peter Miller's looking at Get Her Number for Gary Barber. That Roman Centurion, who Callahan had to pull back out of Santa Anita Derby. And then Dallas Stewart's got Last Samurai. So there's 7 that seem like...
Dallas Stewart always has somebody, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Who's your next guest?
My next guest is John Enos, who won that opener at Keeneland on Friday with the Frosted Filly.
Well, he's not going to get a lot of opportunities to come on your show, so I'm going to step aside.
Andy, I appreciate it. The Thursday-Friday cards are up and actually very good and quite a bit of allowance action, and the turf is back. Great for players. Mixes things up nicely and make hay while the sun shines at the Aqueduct Turf courses. And I thank Andy, as always, for the insight. And
thank you. See you later.
We'll talk to you next week. Andy Serling, everybody. We'll stay right here. We got about 25 minutes. And as I mentioned, in case you're – I know he's in the system because John joined us last year. But just in case, let me send you that number so that you can bring John in here. And and of course, my phone. That's great. That's great. The phone just died. Unbelievable. Ennis, Casey. So he was on last July, I believe. Pretty funny. I might if you have trouble with it, I may have an option. a different option in terms of finding the number. Unbelievable. My phone, here we go. So clever. Oh, except that this doesn't tell you how. Unbelievable. Let me know, Case, because I don't know what. I'm not sure how I'm going to pull this off, although I could forward. Let me go to my instant messaging. Here we go. I got it. I'm so can't keep me down. Hold on. All right. So 20. Okay. All right. I had to write it down because I couldn't copy it. Oh, you do have it. Look at you. Who's better than Casey? I love it. I love it. Yeah. John was on, and he'll remember, because he had $500,000 seller, and it was a tremendous score. But this is a different scenario. This is a horse that John bought at Keeneland in the 10th session, 42,000 frosted out of a really nice female family. And John Enos joins us. John, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
John, first of all, you obviously picked this filly out. She was in the 10th session, so late in Keeneland, September. Was it a surprise to you that she was that far back in the sale and that you got her for 42?
It was, but she wasn't over big as a yearling, to be honest.
Yeah.
She wasn't over big, but she had a really big walk, really correct, and she vetted really good. It was a surprise she was so far back, but I was kind of pleasantly pleased that I got her for 42,000. I thought I might have to pay more money for her because she looked my type of yearling, and seemed to have a great mind on her in the sale. And it worked out great, thank God.
I don't know if you saw the tweet that I put out, but as I watched the race on Friday, and it was early, it was a fairly quiet Friday, and I saw the dam, and I said to myself, I remember that dam. This was one that Graham had, Toast of Mayfair, and I see that she won it first asking. Then I looked at Appealing Zophie, of course, who was a Grade One winner. She won it first asking, and her damn Sophie won it first asking. And so four generations of daughters, all first out winners. That's fairly amazing.
Yeah, no, it was great. When I seen that myself, when I looked at her first in the back in the bands, her pedigree did suggest speed and precocity, and I was really attracted to her. So, that family really helps, and they all showed speed early. They all won at two, and this filly has done the same, and it looks like she's got a really bright future.
Tremendous. And did you buy this one with the partners in tow, or did you buy on spec and then bring some people in?
Yeah, no, I buy all mine on spec. I buy all mine. I buy them all, like, just ones I like that I think, oh, yeah, I want to train that one. So, and then I obviously have two partners watching what I'm buying, and they're, oh, we'd love a piece of that, or we'd love a piece of this. And I usually get them all shares sold out before the new year comes in, and I obviously keep a piece of all of the yearlings I buy. But I bought her on my own and sold shares in her.
The difficult part, I would imagine, for you and the various speculators that do this, when you get a showcase and you get a horse that then does exactly what you're hoping they're going to do, win at first asking, win in a splashy setting, the first two-year-old race of the year. The phone starts ringing, and then the decision comes about having to sell. I mean, talk about this business philosophy, first of all, in general.
I think any horse in general that win first time out, or especially on a big stage like Keeneland or Churchill or Saratoga, any of them horses that win on a big stage, you will get people calling, and that's just the norm. Whether the clients want to sell or not is another thing. I'm in the module to sell. I'd almost sell eventually at some stage, whether it's now or whether it's later. That's what I do. And obviously the owners, they're excited about her. And going forward, we hope that she's going to be a nice filly. We think she's a nice filly, and you know, if she keeps on improving and keeps going the way we think she will, you know, the offers will keep coming. So it's a kind of a stage, like, you know, it's a business I do that I like to sell them and move them on, but when is the right time to sell, or, you know, and I kind of leave that up to the client. So it's one of those things, when is the right time to sell, and how nice do you think she is? But she's very, very nice, and at some stage we probably will end up having to sell her, you know, because I think she's going to progress into a nice filly as the summer goes on.
Over the years, when doing this, and of course, we talked last July when you sold that county final for $500,000, which was a score.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's it. And, you know, that could be a possibility. We might wait till July, or we might sell her privately before. Or, you know, there's always the sale coming in towards the end of the month, this month. And then, it's a great position we're in, you know, to have a city that kind of everybody wants a piece of. And, I am the senior, likes her, loves her. She just, you know, so it is a great position to be in. And you know, well, she's. I would, as the owner, they don't mind holding on to her if the money wasn't right for her or whatnot. But because I just think she's extremely fast, and her early speed, and it's just I wouldn't like to run against her, you know.
Well, and people, you know, everybody is so focused on Wesley and his 2-year-olds, and he was actually on with us, and obviously he had a fabulous Friday and Saturday. Nobody has to feel sorry for, as I said to Wesley, nobody's feeling sorry that the 2-year-olds didn't succeed on Friday. And John said about your horse and about you as a horseman, you know, he had nice things to say, and I think people acknowledge that nobody was beating Frosted on Friday.
Yeah, no, Wesley's a gentleman. He's a great person, super horseman. He was actually the first man to come and congratulate me, and you know, I just try to aspire to be something like Wesley if I can, you know, and be as professional and as classy as he is, because I have so much to learn. When he, you know, he knows so much about the game. He knows so much about these 2-year-olds, and he's probably come out tomorrow and the next day and, like, win these 2-year-old races, and that's just the norm. But I'm just delighted that just to be even, like, held in the same regard, or mentioned in the same regard as Wesley, because he's one man I do really look up to.
Well, give us a feel. I'm going to ask you, of course, about the horses that are coming up tomorrow and Thursday. But talk about your budget and you know, how much you go to September. You know, what you bring, what your parameters are, and what, you know, how many horses you feel comfortable taking into the winter.
I this year I had 16, 17 2-year-olds, a yearlings kind of thing. You know, I kind of want, like, in around that 20 range, where I'm very hands-on. I break them all myself, and so we try to do everything ourselves. Budget-wise, you know, I don't really want to overspend, because I want to keep kind of value for the clients and value for myself. I don't want to get into a hole where I'm overspending, and you know, you can get carried away at the sales, and you can spend too much for horses at the sale. So I kind of, you know, I walk up there with a budget. I can never put a number on a horse, really, but you kind of know when, this is too much. Or when you go up to the ring, you have to have a number in your head, and you know this is what you're going to. And if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. And, you know, I kind of saw it at the top of my number with that Frosted filly, but I kind of really wanted it. So she was probably one that I probably would have overspent my budget to buy, because I really liked her, but luckily, I got her probably right on budget or a little under, you know.
How do you finance this exactly, John? Do you have investors?
I have investors that will buy in. I have people that will buy in. It's just really snowballed, because for the last 4 years, I've always bought inexpensive horses on my own money. And I've just invested my own money into it, and last year, obviously, I sold the horse very well. I owned half of, and so I had that money there to spend, and you know, it's no good sitting here in the bank and you're not making any money in the bank. So I was always told growing up, invest in yourself, and that's what I'm trying to do. And I'll just keep, obviously I don't want to spend stupid money on horses, like big, big money, and put myself in a hole. But yeah, no, I'll keep, if I keep making money, I keep investing and keep investing in my own, basically, judgment and what I think. And if I get it wrong, it's my fault. Nobody else, you know, I'm not getting anyone else to buy my horses, and I do it all myself. So I just kind of trust myself if I can, you know, and if I get it wrong, I get it wrong.
That's a tremendous way to go through life, you know, just believing in yourself and making your way. Hey, talk about the ones. Let's look at the ones that are coming up. You got Jack the Lad tomorrow, and you've got the 47 people are involved, as well as Hayden Noriega. This is a Street Boss colt.
Yeah, Street Boss colt, lovely precocious colt, great bone, lovely body. Been breezing good, big hard, tries hard, he's very fast too, just been paddock schooling him right now, and he took all the preliminaries really well, put the saddle on him up there, and now he's ready to go. You never know what's in there, but he'll know his job, he'll hit the lids hard, and I'm expecting a big run from him and the other horses in there, Vidal. There's actually not much between the two of them on their homeworks. They always breeze together. They always kind of go at similar times. So it's kind of on the day which colt is going to be, basically has the look of the racing gods and gets a clean break. And there's not much between both of them. They're both pretty sharp, you know?
Well, the six, the Vidal is the six. This is a midshipman colt that's a homebred for Crumbaugh Lane, and some partners came in with them as well. And the other is the seven, Jack the Lad, is the Street Boss colt. This is in the opener tomorrow at Keeneland. And then we turn to Thursday, and you come back in the second race. Only one, I think there's only 1 2-year-old on Thursday. This is fillies that are coming together, and we see She's Got Attitude, a Tisnow filly that again is a bit of a homebred. Ken Donworth and you are partnered up.
Lovely filly, real two-year-old type. She has done a lot of work with Bohemian Frost in the past, and she probably wasn't as sharp as her early, but the last couple of works have been really sharp. She's been breezing really good. Lovely filly. Great moving filly. Very athletic. Smart. So, you know, she's going to be, you know, she's tough. I really like this filly. She's got a nice pedigree as well. But she can run. She's sharp, and she knows her job. So, you know, I really like this filly on Thursday.
Very nice. This is in the second race. She actually drew the attention on the morning line, too. She's second choice behind Wesley, who's got a National Defense filly for Stone Street, Twilight Gleaming, the seven. She's Got Attitude, the six, for John Enos. And, John, I should also fold in, you know, you ran quite a few, actually, over the winter at Turfway. That you know, talk about, you know, some of the ones that are holdovers.
Yeah, no, I had a few. I didn't. I had a few to run at Turfway. Few older horses. A nice filly that won first time out at Turfway, Maiden Special Weight, called Southern Mama. She actually breezed on the grass this morning at Keeneland. She'd probably go for an allowance here on the 16th at Keeneland. 5.5 in the grass. She breezed really good this morning. So she's got loads of talent. She's a filly by Elusive Quality, so keep an eye on her. And then I have another horse that ran at Turfway called Mole Reserve. He's going to run around the same time, I think, allowance going long on the dirt. And he was quite impressive out in California, and he came here to me after a long layoff, and he ran fifth in the allowance at Turfway, and we're very happy with a good allowance race, and we're really happy with it. And but he's been working lights out at the minute, so providing we keep him in one piece and he's fit and healthy, we'll be running him at Keeneland too, and he's definitely one to look forward to too.
Are the now the horses that you kept through the winter and you mentioned, you know, a little older, are these horses that just didn't come to hand or had, you know, they had delays getting ready for that
sure,
kind of thing?
I'm not sure about Mole Reserve. He I think he was laid up. Maybe he had some sort of a time off for whatever reason, and he came to me, and he hasn't looked back. As I say, he's an older horse now, and he's a 4-year-old now, but he's perfect now. He's a real nice horse, and I'm super thrilled to have him. And Peter Phillips is just a late starter, late developer, Southern Mama. He won as a 4-year-old first time out, so first of the year, I think first of January she actually won. So she won first of the year, but the way she done it was really impressive. And so she was just a late developer, and the owners give her time, and she's been really good at the minute. So I'm excited to see her run a keynote.
Nice. And Southern Mama, you mentioned elusive quality. She's out of a mineshaft mare, and actually a pretty nice female family involved in Southern Mama. And
yeah.
this could be a 4-year-old that still got plenty of upside.
No, she's a beautiful filly to look at. Physically, stands over a lot of ground, strong, great hip, great midsection, and as breeding purposes go down the road, I think she'll make a fantastic brood mare. We're hoping, we're thinking that we can maybe get a bit of black type with her eventually, you know. So
sure.
I think she's one that'll make it into a lovely brood mare eventually.
Well, and it sure looks, even though she won on synthetic and broke her maiden on synthetic, she certainly works like a horse that should be okay on the dirt.
Yeah, no, she works fantastic. She's very fast, really. It was the first time on the grass today, a Keenan Breezen, and she went 49 and 2, I think, but in a nice manner. I actually rode her myself and handled it really good, and she breathes really good. A nice group of horses went in the grass today, and she breathes as good as any of them. And if we run the grass and it comes off, we can run the dirt, so it's not going to hinder anything.
I see back in March, on March 11th at the Thoroughbred Center, she bulleted best of 39, 47 and 2. This is a horse to watch, and John Enos certainly has proven again needs to be watched, and fits right in there with all of those early season outfits, John Hancock and company, and Wesley and Jim Chapman. John doing great. Super start to the season at Keeneland. And if people want to work with you, if they want you to help them pick out horses, how do they reach you?
Yeah, my email is johnennistraining@gmail.com. Anyone can send me an email and I'll get back to them straight away. I'd be happy to help anyone that's listening, and maybe we can get them another fast one for next spring.
Well, and you know, you're on Twitter too, right? I followed you on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter as well. Yeah, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and all that, trying to keep up to date with all the social media. And I have to keep everybody in the loop, you know.
In fact, here it is, John Enos with two N's, Enns 35. John Enos 35. John, well done. Continued success. I appreciate the visit.
Thanks very much. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. John Enos back again, and last year, $500,000 success with that county final that West Point has got, and went on to win the Tyro and was in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, and now scoring off with the first horse of the Keeneland meet. And I hope you took notes on the ones that are coming up tomorrow and Thursday, and then this Southern Mama down the road. We've only got a couple of minutes. Just wanted to touch base with Papo Morales from AmWager. And, of course, Thursday we'll do another formtowin.com get-together on Twitch, 4 o'clock. But, Papo, how was your weekend?
It was chalky, Steve.
yeah. Well,
I mean, I only concentrated on Keeneland, and it was hard to beat the favorites, but I mean, there was a reason they were getting played, and you know, try to get creative and not use Fletcher's horse Malathat, but she ran like she could be something, and she even looked green coming down the lane, and she's still just kind of powered away. So she's definitely an Oaks contender, but the solid racing, that's all we can really ask for, and sometimes the prices just don't come through for you.
No, understood. And you know, from a form to win standpoint, there were some horses that ran okay that the system had in amongst. But you're right. Given the results, at least at Keeneland, I mean, in New York, as it happens, Bourbonic turns out. I went back and checked, and now my phone died, so I can't go look at the chart I pulled up. But there wasn't. Even with the experience he had, there wasn't. I don't think he was ever higher than about fifth or sixth in the, on the form to win number.
Yeah, limited data set with some of these 3-year-olds. But now I think we're getting a solid body of work going into the Derby. The only price for me over the weekend, Steve, was that Special Reserve at Keeneland, who ran second to Flagstaff. I mean, they were 1-2. On everything on form to win.
Yes, they were. That's right.
The only decent exacta. But we'll see as we get closer to Derby. It's gonna be fun. We'll have plenty of data to work with. And you just got to use the horses that sometimes it says, like Rombauer form to win had ranked third, and he came in third as a decent price. But the problem was
that's true.
Chalk that ran 1-2, so it really didn't help you out too much there.
We will we'll handicap some Oaklawn races, and maybe we'll slip in another midweek, especially with Keeneland the next couple of days. Maybe we can slip in a couple of ideas midweek as well, Papo. But I just wanted to check in. Hope you had a nice Easter.
I sure did, Steve. I appreciate you asking about that. And I'll talk to you later this week, and we'll try to find some prizes for you.
You got it. Formtowin.com. Get it downloaded. You get 2 free races a day. We want you to use it and play with it. Use the past 2 days' worth of results. You can go back and kind of retrofit, see what works in terms of the distance parameters that you set, and get a good feel for it. It's invaluable. We're going to send you out into this Tuesday. Back tomorrow, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Chuck Zachney is going to join us. We'll check in with Seth, of course, as well. Pete for Natal tomorrow. Haven't had a chance to talk to Pete in weeks, so we'll get Pete by. Thanks to Kim Weir, and congratulations to TRF, TRFinc.org, and help them. Brad Cox with a very full, informative visit. And, of course, we had David Ross. A really fun half hour. Andy Serling, John Enos, and a quick hit there with Papo. Beautiful, beautiful day, at least here in upstate New York. Starting to get us excited for Spa. We'll get information, too, from Pat McKenna. I'll get that this week. Good luck. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, 3-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.